With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello, Badger fans, and welcome to another edition of Bucky's Fifth Podcast. As always, Tyler Hunt and Matt Bells here covering everything Wisconsin athletics. On today's show, we've got a little bit of football news to get to, a little bit of basketball news to touch on as well. Some transfers now changing a little bit. Wisconsin's still going after a running back in the transfer portal and a little bit of basketball news in the front half. So hopefully you guys will enjoy that. We'll also maybe touch on the special teams, which is the last presser of spring practice that way. In the back half, we'll have Owen Reese on to talk about the NFL draft. Owen is, of course, a contributor over at B5Q, kind of our NFL draft scouting expert, if you will, and he'll come on to talk about what it's going to look like at the top part of the draft, where the Green Bay Packers will go. We're all three Packer fans, so that's what you get to hear about if you're a fan of someone else. I apologize. There's only so much time in the show. And then we'll talk about, of course, the Wisconsin Badgers group. Of course, a lot of guys likely going that third day, not probably any top one, two day guys, but at the same time, I think some NFL teams will be getting some pretty talented players in that third day. So it should be a fun and full episode for you guys to get you into this week a little bit later than normal. Matt, how are you today?
Doing great, yeah. It's nice to be back and to jump into some of this, get everything ready for the NFL draft. Hopefully this will be a nice little prep for that in talking with Owen. I know he usually does such a great job with looking at prospects and thinking through the NFL draft.
Yeah, it's always fun. He's a great follow. If you guys don't already, make sure to go give him a look. He's been doing mock drafts, getting people really excited for this time of year. I know the NFL draft is always an exciting time, but when you see where some former Badgers will end up, or you see where your NFL team might be going in terms of their selection, it's always fun and exciting, and we'll be underway Thursday night. So before we do that, let's talk about some news. We didn't get to this in the last episode. Reggie Pearson, of course, a couple episodes ago, we talked about him transferring to South Dakota. He has since announced a decommitment and a commitment to Texas Tech, which is, of course, a big jump back to the Division I level. I'll be honest, when he announced going to South Dakota, I thought, man, for an FCS school, they're getting quite a steal in terms of a player. I mean, I think we both kind of talked about how high we think of Reggie Pearson as a player, and unfortunately his situation in Wisconsin didn't work out. But now for Texas Tech, I think they're getting a really strong and talented defensive back. So really happy to see that Reggie was able to land at a Power 5 program like that. But what did you make of that situation?
Yeah, I shook my head when I saw that he was already committed to South Dakota. Seems like that Texas Tech offer went through and he jumped on it, which is great for him. I think it's a natural spot for him. Texas Tech does bring in a lot of transfers usually. They do pretty well with guys who have a similar mold to him in their defense. So I think it's a really good fit. I'm hopeful that his health kind of maintains so he can see success on the field for them and in the Big 12. So I think overall it's a good move for him. But yeah, that's a tough blow for a team like South Dakota who had to have been just so excited to get him on campus.
Yeah, I'm sure they were just salivating at the chance to have a player of his caliber. When I saw that he had changed so quick, it wasn't really a surprise to get that offer from Texas Tech to be able to get back there. Like you said, hopefully his health is all right and good, and he can be back there. I know he tweeted out that he's had a lot of nights thinking and praying for this opportunity, so hopefully he gets the best, and it all works out for him as part of the Red Raiders. Speaking of the transfer portal, Wisconsin football is targeting a former Clemson running back, former four-star kid, Chez Malusi, is I believe how you pronounce his last name. 427 yards with the Tigers in his two seasons there, 6 touchdowns. Really a talented player coming out of high school, probably a situation where the last few years kind of stuck behind Travis Etienne, who's a pretty good running back in terms of NFL draft, of course, would be a guy that is a high draft selection. Wisconsin, we've talked about the running back room kind of being a concern a little bit right now. It would make a lot of sense for them. We know that they've been kicking the tires on this in the past, but it sounds like they are really heavily going after a player that seems to have some talent there, just hasn't really gotten a huge opportunity at his former school in Clemson.
Yeah, I think this is a really good offer that they're pursuing. You can see that there is a lot of smoke when you look at the amount of following going on. I mean, Twitter musings aren't always indicative of what to expect. I mean, we all remember earlier this spring when many of us thought that Marquis Stepp was going to be a Badger. But I think a four-star kid out of high school, really talented out of Florida, like you mentioned, stuck behind a really, really good running back. And the fact that Wisconsin is all over him and really going after this, I mean, he just said that he was going to be hitting the portal 2 days ago. So for there to be this much momentum is usually a good sign. You look at the depth chart, and nobody's healthy right now. They got Jack Dunn running back reps in spring practice, which is not great. So I think this is a position that would make a ton of sense. I like that it would balance out some of the scholarship numbers because he would essentially flow right in where Nakia Watson was and give them somebody who's had carries in big-time moments. And so I think this is a really good guy that they should be going after. And so hopefully they are able to close the deal because you look at his offers out of high school and it's Auburn, LSU, Miami, Michigan, North Carolina, Notre Dame, Texas A&M, USC, like this is a good offer list, not to mention the fact that he enrolled and played at Clemson. So he's part of a winning team. He's the type of guy that I think you would want and would definitely help out the roster because right now they just don't have healthy guys. And if you're worried about Jalen Berger being able to stay healthy come fall, you need somebody else that you can trust. And I don't think they want to run into it with a couple guys who have been injury prone so far in their careers and a bunch of freshmen coming in.
Yeah, I think it's a move that makes a lot of sense for Wisconsin. You know, just given what they've got in their running back room right now, it's just there's names and bodies there, but right now if everyone's banged up, that doesn't do you much good that way. And I like that you brought up the offer list and then him getting kind of valuable time at Clemson because this isn't a situation where he went there and kind of fell down the depth chart and never got an opportunity. He got carries. He scored for the Tigers when he was playing. And I think just, you know, it's a football factory, a powerhouse like Clemson. You've got Travis Etienne in front of you. You've got other talented running backs coming in. Just weren't enough carries to probably go around in that situation. But it's not like he was a player that never even sniffed the field for the Tigers or anything like that and is just looking for maybe a step below. You know, this kid is a guy that has played and is talented, had some really big offers, and hopefully Wisconsin can close the deal because I think for all both sides and the scholarship numbers that you kind of mentioned, it makes a lot of sense, and hopefully the Badgers can continue to that pursuit and possibly land him because I think it would do Wisconsin, especially their depth, a lot of good.
Yeah, you look at it, there's so many carries that are able to go around because you lost so many guys from last year, and you look at what they normally had when they had Jonathan Taylor, that was a hell of a lot of carries. So it's one of those aspects where he would be walking into a really good situation to possibly earn playing time, whether he's RB1 or RB2, I think he would be seeing significant snaps. And so it's a matter of trying to add some depth there because Isaac Rendo, we love the kid. He's very talented. He's fast as hell. But right now, he's had that hamstring issue pop up so many times. Julius Davis, we've seen one carry in 2 years, and he was a really talented prospect coming out of high school. But once again, we haven't seen it yet. He's not healthy. So you wonder, it's one of those things where it'd be awfully nice to bring in a really talented guy, or at least talented on paper, what we've seen in high school. I doubt he's gotten a hell of a lot worse. So hopefully they can get him, because otherwise you might be seeing a little bit of the Brady Shipper experience come fall behind Jalen Berger.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting situation, but we'll make sure to keep an eye on it. And like you mentioned right at the start, Wisconsin seems to be all over that, so hopefully some development can happen. Like you mentioned, he had only put his name in the transfer portal a couple days ago, and it seems like the Badgers were on it right away. So you can tell there's serious interest there, and hopefully Wisconsin comes out the winner in that draw, but we'll have to keep an eye on it and see. Moving on down the line here, we'll talk a little bit of basketball news as well before we get to that special teams presser. Alonzo Tucker, there's been reports that he will not be back with the Wisconsin basketball staff. I know that, again, it's kind of a little bit of smoke because, you know, no official announcement from UW, but, you know, according to his, I believe, Twitter, it is no longer part of his bio. So, again, nothing confirmed, but it sounds like that is probably the case. I know when he took that position, he was kind of just in an interim basis, of course, with the Howard Moore situation. At the start, it didn't seem like it was going to be a long-term thing, but certainly an interesting story nonetheless when you think about a former Badger, you know, Wisconsin basketball legend, now part of the staff and possibly not being back there. So what do you make of that situation?
Yeah, I mean, he had that interim tag even when it became pretty apparent that Howard Moore wasn't going to be coming back, or at least it appeared that way. Who knows? There's still always possibility of that. But you look at it, and he brought – a little something to the sidelines that I think this team could benefit from. He had a role in the university prior to it, so maybe because he's part of the committee looking for the new athletic director, maybe he shifts more in an admin role, getting back into some of the work he was doing prior to working on the basketball staff, because I don't know if being a basketball coach is exactly what he wanted all along. But I'm guessing there's going to be more to come out of this. It's going to be more transparent in the future. But as of right now, I think you just have to hope that it'd be nice to keep him around Madison, and specifically in the athletic department, and hopefully they can bring in somebody on staff who can kind of help them out in some of the aspects, specifically if they could bring somebody in who, like Close used to be, where he was the shot doctor, somebody who really has a good basics for helping guys improve their shots, so we can see some of the progression as shooters over the course of their careers. Tucker was here for such a small sample size that it's hard to know what he would have brought in the years to come, but really I think if they can bring in somebody to replace him that can help them out, not only on the recruiting front, but also in some of those aspects of development, I think it could be a wash or a possible even gain down the road, especially if Tucker stays in the athletic department in a different role.
Yeah, I think that's the big part of it, is that if he's maybe transitioning back into what he was doing before, being a coach, like you mentioned, it didn't seem like for him that being a college basketball assistant coach is something he wanted to do long term. You know, he stepped in that situation but did certainly provide a spark to Wisconsin basketball. So if he is, I think it would be a win-win situation if you can fill his spot with someone that brings something similar to the table, and also have it's probably best of both worlds to have of course Alonzo Tucker in some sort of admin role helping out with the Wisconsin Athletics, because he's definitely a guy that represents UW well and does a great job in really kind of whatever he's been a part of. So I'm sure for the Wisconsin athletic staff, he's a guy that they don't want to lose in any regard. So it's going to be an interesting situation to keep an eye on. But hopefully the Badgers, in some capacity, can keep Alonzo Tucker, a part of Madison and Wisconsin athletics.
Oh, one would have to hope.
Sure. All right, moving on down the line, special teams presser. The last one, I believe we broke down every other position. I think this one... there were some interesting takeaways for sure. What did you make of that press, or anything that really jumped out to you before we get into anything NFL draft related?
I think the big thing was the place kicking competition that's going on, in that Coach Herring said that that's going to continue on into the fall, that they haven't nailed that down, which I think is a pretty large development. You've got Jack Van Dyke, who's a younger guy, who's lengthy at 6'5". We saw him handle kickoffs last year, and he's pushing to possibly usurp Colin Larsh at this point. So I think that's the big thing, was that, hey, they're still looking for between one of those guys to go ahead and take a hold of the role. And we've seen inconsistency from from Colin Larch throughout his career in Madison as a place kicker. You have to hope that somebody, whoever wins it, does a better job this upcoming year, because place kicking is such an important role on the team, and Larch doesn't necessarily have a huge arm or huge leg. So if Van Dyke could grab that job, which I would think would require him to show that he's definitely better than Larch and the better player, I think that would be a pretty big swing for the team, and hopefully be indicative of the fact that that Van Dyke is talented and that he's going to help them out, instead of just the two of them just are trading and going back and forth kicking, and neither one can kind of find a rhythm all year.
Yeah, I think the important part to watch when you look at, you know, anytime there's a kicking competition, you want to hopefully have a guy that goes out and wins the job and takes the reins on it, and whether, you know, not kind of going back and forth, because if you're going back and forth, it means you're really probably not super confident in either option. So whether it be Colin Larch or Van Dyke, I think both of those guys have had the capabilities. They just need to, you know, be more consistent with it, you know, especially on Colin Larch's side. We've had years now of it, of just inconsistencies, and in a place kicking role like that, which is so vital to not only how you approach in special teams, you know, just knowing where you've got, you know, maybe you've got a guaranteed 3 points, but also how you call your offense and what targets you're trying to get to. It makes a huge deal. If you feel that you're not super confident in your place kicking, that kind of changes your whole approach in terms of, you know, when they're going to go for it, when they're going to settle to kick it, when they feel like they can, you know, kind of rely on those things. So yeah, I think really in terms of takeaways, special teams and what you're looking for, that place kicking competition is really the number one, you know, big important bullet, because that has been such a problem for the last couple of years. And if they're not finding a guy and it's consistently, it'll be probably a problem, you know, once again, if they don't find a guy that is hitting those reps like they need to.
Yeah, for sure. It's such an invaluable position that hopefully they get better production out of this year. I'm not too worried about other spots right now in the special teams, but that one is definitely one to keep an eye on come fall.
Most definitely. All right, guys, that wraps up our intro part of it, so stick with us through a couple quick ad reads, and then we'll get into our NFL draft preview with Owen.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My name is this because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope, it's the dog.
All right, Badger fans, we now welcome on our NFL draft expert guru, Owen Reese, one of our few reoccurring guests to the show. We usually don't have a ton of guys back on, but Owen's usually always willing to come on and talk about the NFL draft, kind of talk about where the Packers might be going, where some of these former Badgers might end up. So, Owen, thanks as always for joining us. How has this kind of draft season been for you, kind of getting prepped? I know you've had a lot of mock drafts out, at least for me as a Packer fan, getting excited about some of your picks. So excited to see where we go in this conversation.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me back again. And yeah, for sure. I mean, it's always good. Draft season's always fun. I always kind of joke around, like, by this time of the year, there's so much media crap going on and smoke screens and lies and teams are leaking stuff to try to get guys to fall and all this stuff. It's I'll be excited for the draft and I'll be excited for it to be over at the same time, but it's always fun.
Well, let's kind of start at the top, just in the overall NFL draft, because it seems like these first few picks, 1, 2, 3, I think one is probably a done deal, but after that, these quarterbacks,
it better be.
I would hope so. As a Jacksonville Jaguar fan, I'm sure they're hoping that that one's already signed, sealed, and delivered, so to speak. But after that, the conversation around these quarterbacks and where these guys are going to end up, you talked about the smoke screen with the falling. It seems like there's some of that going around with Justin Fields, who I know some people see as the number two talent, you know, off the bat, and there's conversations all over the place on all these guys. So where do you think some of these quarterbacks going, and where does that top three and some of those other, you know, picks kind of round out in your opinion?
Yeah, so, yeah, obviously Trevor Lawrence, I mean, we've known since he was a senior in high school, right? Like, was going to be – took over for a senior at Clemson. Like, they basically forced him to transfer, essentially, after, like, week four to get Lawrence in the game. And from then we've known, right, that was kind of the trajectory for him. It's been really interesting, right, because Justin Fields is also, like, he and Trevor Lawrence are both from Georgia, right? They both came out in the same high school class. They were both in the Elite 11 together. They were the number one and two quarterbacks in the country. I think they were, like, the number one and three all-time highest-rated recruits in 24/7 history. So, I mean, like, they've always been tied together. And it's so weird, and this whole process is so weird and dumb that, like, last year, you know, around this time, they're talking about, oh, well, you know, Justin Fields is the number two pick, doesn't need to take another snap in college, doesn't need to do anything, right? Like, he's the de facto number one pick or number two pick. And then, you know, turns out, well, he does end up playing, and apparently that, you know, he's lost ground because of it. So I do think that Zach Wilson, the BYU kid, is going to go to the Jets. I mean, unless they've been playing a real, real long game here, I think they've been pretty locked in on him for quite a while. And then from there, you know, then that's where the fun kind of starts, right? Because San Francisco traded up to 3, and they gave up all this capital. And then it seems like, well, they're locked in on Mac Jones, or at least that's what the media says. That's what's been leaked, right? And then, so, of course, everyone on Twitter has been absolutely insufferable because of that for the last 3 weeks. And then, you know, now there's talk, well, could it be Trey Lance? And maybe has it been Justin Fields the whole time? And Kyle Shanahan basically showed up yesterday and was like, well, I don't know, like, we all might be dead on Sunday. And I'm like, well, at this point, I kind of hope so. So it's one of those things where I mean, gun to my head, I think at the end of the day, I think they're going to go with Justin Fields, right? Like, that just feels like it should be the right thing to do. But at this point, nothing will really surprise me because you can kind of talk yourself into any of that. So for the sake of this exercise, I'll go with Fields. Then I probably have Trey Lance going, I don't know, like 8 to Carolina maybe, or 9 to Denver. Obviously Denver just traded for Teddy Bridgewater today, right? We're recording this on a Wednesday. You know, but I don't think that trading a sixth round pick for a quote unquote starting quarterback should dissuade you from looking at quarterback. And then I think that Mac Jones, I don't know if they'll call it a fall because I don't know if it was ever really a rise to begin with, but I think somewhere in that, like, New England at 15 or Washington at 19 or Chicago at 20 or one of those three could trade up, something along those lines. I think that I do think at the end of the day he does go in the first round, but it's kind of tough to pigeonhole there. And then I do think some team's going to do something dumb. I think someone else is going to try to get into the first, and like Kellen Mond from Texas A&M or like Davis Mills from Stanford. Someone's really going to try to like take a shot out of left field and hit something on one of these quarterbacks and get that fifth year of control with the first round pick contract. So the quarterback thing, it's always a fascinating thing. This year seems to have, you know, not stopped the cycle of getting maybe more and more ridiculous each year, but at the end of the day, I mean, Trevor Lawrence is the dude, right? And then I think if Zach Wilson and Justin Fields turn out to be as good as they think they should be, or Trey Lance, right? Like, I think this really could be a pretty good quarterback class overall.
Yeah, and it feels like a lot of those guys have some nice feelings, and I agree with you. The fact that Justin Fields' stock has dropped from him basically just going out and being a dude is just befuddling to me. But let's jump into the Packers here, because we're all Packer fans. Most people in Wisconsin are Packer fans. So if you're not a Packer fan, I'm sorry, but we're going to focus there. Where do you see Green Bay going? And then on the flip side, if you were the GM, who are you taking?
I've kind of got it narrowed down to three guys for them, I think. Greg Newsome, the corner from Northwestern, picked off Graham Mertz this year. He's one of them. Any Packer fan will tell you that defensive back is a need and probably has been since Charles Woodson's been there, right? Jaire Alexander's a stud, but Kevin King has obviously not been – he's been fine. He's been serviceable. I think he's probably unfairly judged on his lower moments, right? Like he has been a fairly opportunistic turnover guy in the past. He's been a decent tackler most of the time. He's never quite ended up being the full – concept of what he was supposed to be, right? But like he's been okay, right? It's not like some abomination that he's a starting corner, but they could stand to upgrade, right? And especially after the Tampa Bay game, obviously all the Packer fans have the recency bias or the recency issues of the last play of the game on defense for the Packers and all that stuff. So I think Greg Newsome would be a great fit in this Joe Barry defense. They're going to be a lot less press man, a lot more off ball. Off man, off zone coverage. I think that Newsome is really good in that. He is a good athlete, and would be an upgrade there. I think that allows King to bump down to be your third corner. I think it's probably a better situation. The other two guys are line of scrimmage players. For me, I've really kind of zoned in on Alex Leatherwood, the left tackle from Alabama, as being a guy I think that Green Bay will really covet. He's 6'5", 6'6", 315, really athletic. Started at guard and tackle for Alabama over the past 3 years, former number two overall recruit in the country, part of that 2017 Alabama recruiting class. If you haven't taken a look at that ever on 24/7, it's worth it. Yeah, Tua, Jerry Jeudy, Najee Harris, Henry Ruggs, Alex Leatherwood, Jedrick Wills, all first-round picks probably in that one recruiting class. Just absolutely stupid. So Leatherwood's a guy I think makes a lot of sense. He hits all the athletic thresholds. He's a big dude. He does have tackle experience, even if the Packers were to look at him as a guard. So I think he's a guy that will really intrigue the Packers. And then Carlos Basham, the pass rusher out of Wake Forest. Luckily, the Badgers were able to avoid in the Duke's Mayo Bowl against Wake Forest, which seems about 3 years ago at this point. But he's a guy. He's 6'4", 275. Probably the best comparison I can give you for him is probably like Rashawn Gary, but at the right pick, right? Like I think everyone thought 12 was probably a bit high for Gary. 29, if they took Basham there, is probably a little more in the ballpark. Freak athlete, inside and outside versatility, I think will be intriguing for the Packers. I think that ultimately, though, if they were to take him, that's like a look to the future, right? Because Preston Smith was somewhat surprisingly brought back. I'm happy they did, but I would be shocked if he was in Green Bay past this upcoming season, right? And then Za'Darius Smith, I believe his contract is up after 2022. So that's another thing where obviously we've enjoyed his time here, and I think he wants to stay, but I think he's also going to garner a pretty hefty paycheck. And depending on where Davante Adams' contract lays and what Rodgers' contract situation is at the time, like there's always going to be some cap creative accounting stuff going on. So I think that in the worst case scenario in 2 years, you're starting outside linebackers are Rashawn Gary and Carlos Basham, which isn't the worst thing in the world. So those are the three guys I'm kind of locked in on. Obviously there's always the potential for me to be not even close, but I think those are the three guys that kind of fit what they're going to be looking for and could, based off of what we found from Brian Gutekunst, could be fill needs now or kind of strengthening strengths so they don't become weaknesses by neglecting them type of thing. So those are kind of my three shots in the dark for the first round at 29.
Yeah, I think all those names would be something that most Packer fans would sign up for just based on the needs that you mentioned and kind of filling those and strengthening some of those spots. Getting into Wisconsin now, you probably don't have any guy in that first 2 days. But should have some guys going, in that day three range, maybe a guy like Rashad Wild Goose, Cole Van Lannen. Where do you see those two maybe ending up in terms of, I don't know if you know of a team, but also sort of just a fit and possible mold that they could step into and have a successful career?
Sure, yeah, I was going to say there's probably two guys that are going to go from Wisconsin and the first 2 days. Unfortunately, neither of them are Badgers. Yeah, I mean, I think Rashad Wild Goose probably has the best shot to go first. You know, it, just from an athletic profile, I've kind of been playing around with this phrase. I think it makes sense. Like, to me, Rashad Wild Goose is an SEC corner that ended up in the Big Ten, and like, he wants to get up on the line of scrimmage and play press and play man and really get up in your face, and that's really just not what Wisconsin does a lot. You know, Wisconsin plays a lot of zone with Jim Leonard, and like, you saw how he wanted to play, right? Like, the way he attacks bubble screens and quick screens and like stuff at the line of scrimmage, he's just absolute terror that way. You know, but like I said, in Wisconsin's defense, he really wasn't asked to do that a ton. I think a team, you know, the NFL is much more man-heavy than college is. I think that, you know, some team like Miami, right, he is a Miami native, so that kind of works. A team like New England, teams from that ilk, right, that tree that really kind of major in man coverage. I would say Detroit. Obviously, Matt Patricia's gone from there, but that lineage of guys I think would be a great fit for him. Probably, I don't know, fifth round probably or so would be about when you're ready to see him come off the board. And Cole Van Lannen, another guy that, like, was a good player for Wisconsin, but was probably never fulfilled the hype of the, you know, like, the first big Paul Chris recruit, and was a four-star lineman from in-state. And you think, like, oh, well, a four-star lineman going to Wisconsin, he'll probably be a first-round pick. You know, he was a good college player, just never quite lived up to that. The other thing, he did test very well athletically. I never saw that athlete from Cole Van Lannen on the football field. So I'm curious to see how NFL teams handle that. I think he might end up as a guard at the next level. I think you should give him a chance to fail at tackle first or be an emergency swing tackle at the most. But I think he ends up a guard. I think that athleticism and his zone scheme is really going to make some team happy mid to late day three, right around five or six, probably somewhere around there. I know, obviously, Duke Manyweather isn't in the business of trashing his own clients, but I know he's been very high on Cole Van Lannen. Very complimentary of him as well. So maybe NFL teams take some stock into that. Like I said, anytime you're a two-plus-year starter at Wisconsin and a good athlete on the O-line, like, you're going to get drafted. It's just probably in that Dave Edwards range, maybe in that fifth, sixth round area. And then those are probably, unfortunately, probably the only two guys that are, like, likely to get drafted out of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the way it goes. And I like that you brought up Rashad Wild Goose, because I think he was such a good tackler. And what he can do in the open field in terms of tackling is definitely going to help some team in the NFL level. But now getting into the offensive players who are left over that aren't, you know, CDL, basically Derek Groshek, John Dietzen, Mason Stocky. What do you envision for those guys? I'm guessing they're probably undrafted guys, but what do you think would be good fits for them as they go into this process?
Yeah, and I think the other thing too, like, I don't want to lengthen this out too much, but this is kind of a neutered group, right? Like, there's no not that he's going to really fulfill the class, right? But, like, there's no Jack Dunn, there's no Jake Ferguson. You know, Noah Burks went back, Cedar Williams, Fayon Hicks, a lot of guys, Colin Wilder, all went back, and while only Ferguson's probably the only guy out there that would, like, be a draftable guy, you know, this class seems a bit small, and that's why, right? Like, a lot of these guys taking advantage of this COVID extra year of eligibility. But so to me, like, Garrett Groshek's the most intriguing by far. I think some team like Baltimore, or even I'm curious to see if a team of the Kyle Shanahan ilk, right, with like Kyle Juszczyk type, if some team wants him to put on 15 pounds and try to be like a move fullback like that, would be intriguing to me. But I think that like his pass catching ability and pass pro is like the best way I can describe this for him. Like, he's going to be so much harder to get rid of than he should be. Like, he just does everything right. He's always in the right spot. He doesn't screw up. So to me, like, somewhere like Baltimore, or like I said, maybe even in that Shanahan offense, even with Green Bay, maybe, right, that offense is going to be going to the Jets as well, right, so they could be a potential option there. Outside of that, Mason Stocky, right, any team that uses a fullback, you know, unfortunately, two of the starting fullbacks in the league are from Wisconsin, so at a certain point they're going to start cannibalizing each other here for roster spots, but he's a guy in Tennessee, maybe, one of some of the few teams that still use fullbacks. Unfortunately, it is kind of a dying position. This is unfortunately not the football that probably our forefathers wanted back in the day, but is what it is. And then outside of that, I would be shocked. Like, I really like John Dietzen. Like, he's one of my favorite guys I've ever covered during my time at B5Q, and he's just a really funny guy. I would be shocked at this point, like, if he ended up with anybody. I mean, just from the sheer leg injuries, and John Dietzen was, like, probably along, like, a lesser talented profile of the Cole Van Lannen thing. Like, probably never quite lived up to his recruiting hype. I think he was a borderline, like, four-star guy, too. And just between some athletic deficiencies and pass pro deficiencies and injury issues, I just don't know, like, how much he really has to offer to an NFL team at this point. I mean, like, for him, like, I'm happy he came back and he got his fifth year of playing and all that stuff. But I would be shocked at this point if John gets a look, even in a rookie camp, just because, like I said, from the physical profile, injury-wise, he's at an uphill battle. And, unfortunately, like I said, the NFL is becoming a passing league, right? So, like, if your best attribute isn't pass protection, your best attribute better be pretty damn good somewhere else. And unfortunately, I just don't know if his run blocking or durability is going to be good enough to find a way to stick somewhere.
Yeah, I think that all makes a lot of sense. And I like what you mentioned about Garrett Groshek. You're going to be a guy that's a perfect analogy of a guy that's going to be hard to get rid of because he's always had that chip on his shoulder. You've seen it at Wisconsin. He went on to bigger things than I think a lot of people expected him to. And I wouldn't be surprised if he makes that same run and tries to make someone really think twice about a cut or anything like that in terms of his play. On the other side of the ball, of course, you've got Loudermilk and Eric Burrell, who I think are both interesting projects as well. Probably, again, guys that are undrafted free agents, but athletic ability and size, of course, for Loudermilk is certainly there. Where do you think those guys would maybe fit, or how do you think they project to an NFL roster?
Yeah, so Isaiah Loudermilk's really weird because he was like 6'7", 305, 295, somewhere around there, kind of bounced between there at Wisconsin. And he was like an 8-man football kid from Kansas, so, right? So, like, there was a big-time learning curve there. We knew there was going to be a ton of development there. And I almost hesitate to say, like, he never quite, like, the concept of what he should be or the sum of his parts never quite ended up there. Like, he was a good defensive lineman. I'm certainly not trying to knock him, right? But, like, I think people see, like, 6'7", 295 and, like, a pretty decent athlete, and everyone's like, holy cow, like, this dude should be an NFL guy. And either Wisconsin's scheme just never quite featured him, or he was still just kind of, like, in that constant state of learning the game, right? Like, in Wisconsin's defensive line is a fairly, like, with that odd front stuff, there's a lot more, like, block recognition stuff there. So, like, there's a lot to learn. And then so he showed up at the pro day, and he was, like, 275. So I don't know if he's trying to play on the edge more or just get lighter to be more athletic, to run faster. I'm not entirely sure. I mean, any type of odd front team I think is going to – unfortunately, I mean, there's not a ton of base played in the NFL anymore, but, like, any 3-4 team, right? Like, his length on the edge is going to be appealing. And then at that point, too, I still think some NFL coach is going to see, like, yeah, well, I can fix him, right? Like, we're going to get it together. So, I don't have, like, a great prediction for that, but any 3-4 team, I think, is going to look at him to be their 5-tech, that front side end, just because he's so long and is a decent athlete at that size. And then Eric Burrell he's, like, one of my favorite kids in this class. I kind of wish he was a better athlete to get a bit more publicity in here. But, I mean, 2.5-year starter for Jim Leonard, very opportunistic, turnover-wise, and a great tackler, very smart, always took good angles. Like, that's the one thing that always kind of stuck out to me is he'd be so Wisconsin plays a ton of single high coverage, but they will either, like, rotate their safeties or they'll start too high and then roll down one of them. And he always did a great job filling the run that way too. So he's a guy, like, I think he'll have to stay in a too high alignment or a defense that kind of majors in that just due to that athletic deficiency, because I don't think he's a guy that you could have full-time down in the box at the NFL level, but I also he certainly can't play center field at that level. So I think he's going to be a guy like the Indianapolis Colts or the Philadelphia Eagles, I think could be a guy or a space for them for a guy like Burrell that he can be a third safety, a special team demon, and kind of be that a depth guy. He might never start, right? Like Chris Maragos was that way for the Philadelphia Eagles for a long time. Was always around, was a solid guy, never offered a ton, like as far as like he's not going to start a bunch of games for you, but can stick around in the league for 4 or 5, 6 years and be a nice part, crucial part for special teams and a nice member of a team like that. I kind of harken back to Indianapolis. Chris Ballard is a Wisconsin alum, their general manager. So I know he made a big deal last year, like when he talked to Jonathan Taylor, like, you're the first Badger I've gotten to draft. So I do think there is some cognizance there, and I think that Burrell could be a guy that, as an undrafted free agent, I never said that about Loudermilk either. I think he'll be an undrafted free agent too. But somewhere, like I said, Philadelphia's defensive coordinator came from Indianapolis. Matt Eberflus in Indianapolis is that similar. They always say they're a big cover two, cover four, cover six team with two high safeties all the time. I think that's where Burrell will have to play athletically. But he could be a guy, like, there's certainly value there. I think he'll, teams will be interested in him as an undrafted free agent or that priority free agent.
There you have it, folks. That's a really good insight from Owen on all things kind of Packers and Wisconsin athletics that way in terms of the NFL draft. Owen, before we go, I know you've got a new podcast that you're working on. You want to plug that for the listeners so they can check it out?
Yeah, you can check me out. It's at the Voice of Reason podcast, at VO Reason, R-I-E-S-E-N, like my last name, podcast. I have an interview with Quinn Miners on there from last week. And I'll be doing some stuff like on each night of the draft as far as who the Packers take. And if wherever the Badgers go, we'll talk about them as well. So just kind of a Wisconsin sports kind of toying around with it. Nothing super special, but kind of just doing some stuff there. Got our Bucky's fifth quarter draft coverage that's kind of all rolled out now. That's been awesome. And for Packer fans, right, I assume a lot of you guys are Packer fans, check out the Cheesehead TV draft guide as well. Fairly cheap, I think it's like $7 or $8. It's a completely Packer-centric draft guide, over 300 players ranked and reports written for. So I've gotten to do that the last couple of years with a lot of talented dudes that write on there. It's a good time.
Phenomenal stuff, guys. If you're looking for Owen's podcast, I'll make sure to put it in our show notes and the B5Q post as well to make sure and go check that out. Owen, thanks as always for joining us. Great insight into the NFL draft, man. And enjoy this weekend. I know you said you'll be happy once it's over, but it should be a fun couple days for the draft.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, look, unfortunately, I'm just a glutton for punishment and look forward to this all year long. So, no, it'll be fun. It's always a good time. It's always fun to see where these guys end up and what these teams add, because it's an important thing. Like, every single team will feel better about their team at the end of the weekend, right? Like, fans always, like, you can kind of crap on a draft or, oh, well, you know, they reached on this guy or whatever. No team feels that way. Every team feels really good about everyone they bring in. So, I mean, it's a fun, optimistic time of the year in the NFL and for football stuff. So it's good stuff to kind of lead into the summer of the Bucks playoffs and the Brewers making a run here.
There you go. Love to hear it. All right, guys. Thank you, as always, for listening. We'll be back with you next week to talk about some post-draft coverage to some other Wisconsin news that I'm sure will pop up. So, as always, on Wisconsin.